Study Program. I'm Chuck Bradford. Well, my schedule says that we're due to talk to Pastor David Andrus. He is the Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission. And we're having a little difficulty connecting with Pastor Andrus. So for the moment, it's just you and me, but we'll survive. Our telephone numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. On the rare occasion that we have a little time as we're attempting to connect to our guest pastor, I have the opportunity to talk a little bit about our homepage and brag. I'll go ahead and brag. Can you do that? I guess you can do that if you boast in the Lord. So giving all credit, and that's easy to do, to our risen Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, we have a wonderful website, homepage, that is just chock full of resources. And if you haven't visited that, or if you haven't used that, then I encourage you to go pay a visit. You will find the Bible study program that we just did with Pastor Bill Simmons archived there very soon. There are hundreds of hours of archives, and we've just about got the entire New Testament archived there. We also have, and this is one of the things that I think is probably not utilized as much as it could be, there are short-form programs there, all the programs that you hear during the broadcast day here, Portals of Prayer with Paul Clayton, the Meyer Minute with Dr. Dale Meyer, Paul Deventer's By the Way program, Front Porch Parenting with Dr. Mary Mann Simon, those are all there. And one of the things that we like to recommend is that people copy the links for those short-form programs onto the homepage for your church. Now, if you're going to do that just to do me a favor, then you don't really need to do that. I mean, if there are programs you hear that you like and you'd say, well, we'll go ahead and do KFUO a favor and we'll put that up. Well, that's not really going to do me a favor. We have those there to do you a favor, to do you a favor in this way. You can promote in your Sunday bulletin that those programs are on your website. And the attractive thing is that then as we change those daily, they change for you. You don't have to do anything. Your webmaster at your church does not have to do anything. And that content changes daily, which means that people can visit your website and find a new Meyer Minute every day, and you don't have to do any work. That makes your website more attractive. Put it on the front page there. And when they click on the Meyer Minute, they're not going to leave. We're not going to sneak them away and get them over here to KFUO.org. They're going to stay on your website. And when they're done listening to whatever it is they're listening to, then you still have them. So it's completely a service that we provide, and it's something that I think you probably would like to consider. Our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I think we've got Pastor Andrus all lined up now. Hi, good morning, Pastor.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Your thoughts after your Easter observation yesterday?
Well, the one thing that came to mind, and I just pondered this all yesterday, it was the last verse of the song, This Shall Be My Confidence. One of the last lines was, as each of our senses fail, faith will cry out, Jesus is my confidence. And it struck me, how often do we really, I'm going to be bold and say, how often do we really hold to those words, as our senses fail, our faith cries out with confidence? I find many times as earthly circumstances buffet and push us around, we sometimes, and I'm including myself here, go, hey, God, what's going on? And I hope and I pray, at least for myself, my family, and for everyone else, that this Easter will have had new and different impact, that even though senses fail, our faith will not, but through that, our faith will go stronger.
Pastor Andrus, you are the Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission. For those folks who are listening to us who are not familiar with the organization, can you describe it for me, please?
Lutheran Blind Mission has as its goal to reach out to those who have lost their sight, to share the gospel in a meaningful way, to let them know that God accepts them, forgives them, and wants to use them in His kingdom. We do that through our outreach centers. We do it through the materials we provide. We do it through other ways as well, all so that they might know they're part of the kingdom of God and reach out to others who are in the same situation as they.
As you described your mission, reaching out to folks in a meaningful way, that mm-hmm. implies that there is a way to reach out which may be devoid of meaning or lacking in meaning or maybe even harmful.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it mean to reach out in a meaningful way?
In a meaningful way means one first must realize the situation in which a person is found, in my estimation. To say to someone, it's going to rain today, is that good news or bad news? To those down in Fenton and Arnold here in the St. Louis area, that's probably bad news. But to say it's going to be sunny today, that would be good news. But in the middle of a three-month drought, in the middle of summer, such as people faced back in the 1930s during the Dust Bowl, to hear it's going to rain, oh, that would be good news. We need to understand the context of those who lose sight. Not only do they lose sight, but they lose often when they are of employable age their job. And as Americans, when we lose our job, we lose that income that it provides, which means then we lose the lifestyle we're used to. But more than that, we lose our identity, because as Americans, I think sadly so, we wrap up who we are with what we do. And so there's 3, 4, 5 losses they face. When they experience that much loss, then to just say God loves you, He forgives you, those words are somewhat empty at times. Instead, the gospel needs to be shared in such a way that it will have impact in that setting. First off, when a person loses their sight, they usually are suggested, go to a doctor. Well, and they do. They go to doctors. See if doctors can do something. And that's a good thing. Don't misunderstand me. It's a wonderful first-line approach. But medicine can only do so much. Doctors have only so much ability. And we find the majority of people will continue to either have that sight loss or it only be slowed down and it'll happen even more later on. And so they're faced with the reality they have sight loss or are blind. And that's another big disappointment. An institution, the medical environment, has let them down. So acceptance for just who they are, not to be changed. That's an important thing. Many times when people are approached who lose their sight, Christians mean well, but they say, well, you know, let's go to a doctor. Tried that. That's no good. That's no help. So for them to say, yeah, so, okay, I accept you. God accepts you. That's the step number one. Once people understand they're accepted for who they are and that they don't have to be changed to become a Christian, then the gospel can mean even more. But then finally, especially here in the United States, when people lose their sight, they feel like they're broken. Again, going back to the medical, if the medical profession can't fix them, just like if a technician can't fix your TV, if it's not fixed, it's broken. And so people feel when they lose their sight, they're broken. And the next step then is, what do you do when something's broken, especially in the American culture, like a pen? You throw it away. And so people feel broken and therefore discarded. And so the next step that we want to share as a meaningful impact gospel that connects with them is Jesus was broken. That's why Good Friday is so important. He understands pain. And not only that, but when he rose from the dead, did he get rid of his scars, his marks in his hands, his side, the points of that pierced him on his forehead? In fact, he used that, and we'll hear this in next week's gospel reading, when he came to show the disciples he was alive and it's him, he showed Thomas his hands and side and said, go ahead, put your finger in here if you want. I'm broken, but I'm alive. And that's what Jesus says to us, that he understands we're broken, but he doesn't discard us. He accepts us, and he knows what we go through. And even as we are, he utilizes us. That's the gospel that Lutheran Blind Mission tries to share to those with visual loss.
I saw a news piece here recently. I wish I could remember what the disseminator was, what the network was. But it was video, so it was not just merely a conversation. Of a man who has recently received a sort of a groundbreaking optical new surgical procedure in which he, I think he had been blind from the time that he was three, and he had regained some of his sight. It was not absolutely clear, but it was sight nevertheless. And the focus of this particular piece was that while the doctors had delivered him the ability to now send optical impulses to his brain, what his problem was is that his brain didn't have any context for that. And while he was seeing things, he didn't quite know what to do with those images.
Exactly.
You're chuckling. What are you thinking?
Well, two thoughts. I think I know the case you're referring to. I did come in contact with that. Someone sent me a transcript of that. And the gentleman out in California. There's one other case that was even a movie was made about of another man several years ago. What I'm chuckling about mostly is in Mark chapter 8, Jesus was brought a man who was blind, and they said, please touch him. And Jesus took him out of the city and touched his eyes, and he said, what do you see? And he said, I see men walking around like trees. And so Jesus touched him again, and then his sight was clear. There's really two miracles that have to take place. The physical eyes have to work. But then, as you just so well said, there was no frame of reference for this man who is now given the optical vision to understand what these images are. Jesus understood that. And so he performed the dual miracle of the physical eye plus then the brain's understanding what those perceptions are.
Let me ask you a question. Now, this is kind of awkward. I don't know if this is appropriate or not, but I'll just
give it a try.
I'll take a chance here. How important is it for a person who does not have sight to come to terms with that reality, that reality which, particularly for somebody who might have had sight and then for some reason or another loses it, and you know, their life will be sightless, and they probably hold out hope against hope that doctors will be able to do this or technology will be able to do that. Well, maybe they just need to come to terms with the fact that they are now sightless, and that's the way it's going to be. And once you come to terms with that, then you can move on. Do you find it discouraging that sometimes the television or the radio talks about breakthroughs and these kinds of things, and you think to yourself, oh, this is just going to delay for so many people the reality, and is going to set back their ability to adjust and move on?
You've said it extremely well. When a person does lose their sight, they do need to come to grips. What we're finding occurs if a person loses their sight prior to 55 years of age, they usually do come to grips with it or go into utter despair. And we find quite a few in utter despair, isolation, and depression. And then that our challenge then is to help them come to grips with that and say, but there's more to life. When you're over 55 and lose sight, Usually the way you come to grips with it is, well, I don't have much life left. I'll just hang around till I die, which brings down a whole different dynamic. When there are medical breakthroughs, as you pointed out, that can cause two things. One, sighted people to say, oh, there's a breakthrough. Would you like it? And I've been asked that by many people since that report has come out. Would you like that? The assumption is that, of course, is my ultimate dream, and my entire aspirations in life is to see once again. And by the way, it's not. But that's the assumption made by everybody, whether it be me or other people. And that does then postpone the coming to grips with the reality that, you know, I won't see anymore. Those who have come to grips with that, like myself, I'm content with who I am, where I am, and I don't need to see with my physical eyes. When I have people say, well, would you like this? At first I got angry. And can't you let me be who I am? Why are you always trying to change me into you? And sometimes I would let out with those outbursts. Which wasn't very good for a pastor to do, actually. But that's what a lot of people face and struggle with once they have come to acceptance. Then that brings a whole dynamic of, why are you trying to change me? And that's why it's so important that we in Lutheran Blind Mission talk about God just accepting us for who we are and wanting to use us just as we are. That's why that piece is so important. Though I've come now to a place where I'm not going to disparage or discourage those breakthroughs. There are people who want that, and there are people who need that, and there will be people who are blessed and helped by that. And that is very important for them.
All right. When I use my imagination, mm-hmm. for example, when I go through the scriptures as we do every day here in a 10 o'clock hour of the Bible study, mm-hmm. and I read Matthew's description of those 6 hours of Christ on the cross, mm-hmm. in my mind, in my imagination, I am seeing something. Mm-hmm. Whenever I watch a movie depicting this, it usually occurs to me that, well, they're seeing it differently than I always pictured it. They had a different view of it in their imaginations. So when you read scripture or you hear scripture read in church, what does your imagination do?
Interesting question. It does two things, actually. One, it does visualize almost like I'm seeing something on TV, especially if there's multiple people in the story. That it's like I'm standing in the crowd watching the soldiers nail Jesus to the cross and lifting him up and hurling insults and ridicule, and I can hear the people. I do visualize that. But also what I find, and this is true with a lot of people who are blind, because we don't see with our physical eyes and view the world that way, but rather we view and visualize the world through touch and our sound, through our much closer. It's what sight does for people is lets you view the world at 10 to 100 feet away. For those who are blind, usually the world is experienced from 5 feet and less. And so there are times I am actually picturing myself as though I am Jesus being nailed to the cross and being lifted up and being high up in the sky and people laughing and jeering at me. Now, that people don't think I have a Jesus complex, I do not. Immediately when I visualize myself being that, I go, and you, Jesus, this is my prayer, you, Jesus, did all that for me? I'm not worthy of that. And I can almost feel the pain racing down my arms and my chest constricting as the cross lifts as the weight of the body pulls down and pulls tight the chest and the arms. I can literally feel the pain. And I thought, and he went through all that for me. In some way, ways, it makes it more personal.
So when you read about the Apostle Paul and his shipwreck, do you see yourself as the Apostle Paul? Do you?
Yes, many times I do. And I go through the pain and then I just shudder because, golly, how do you survive? Yeah.
So would you contend then that you use your imagination decidedly differently than I probably use mine, or is it probably similar? Do you, now here's, let me rephrase.
Okay.
Do you have a better imagination than I do? Because if I'm perceiving most of my reality in terms of 10 to 100 feet, and I know exactly what you mean. I'm sitting here in the radio studio. We have a window in our studio which allows me to look out in the reception area. There's a window in the outside of the building, and I can see the cars parked down by the Chapel of St. Timothy and St. Titus.
Okay.
From where I sit here.
Uh-huh.
And that helps to define my reality. Do you think that you have an advantage over me, since I probably, in terms of my imagination, I don't use the sense of smell at all, and I don't know that how much hearing impacts my imagination. It's just practically all visual. Maybe you have an advantage.
There are times there's an advantage, and there are times there's disadvantages. Today, as you and I think the audience knows, you've caught me working in my study. I have been down at the radio station and sat in the same room with you. And as I did not realize you had a window that could see all the way down to see the cars and the chapel of St. Timothy and Titus. It just blows my mind away. You can see all that? That's a quarter mile away.
Have to reconfigure the picture that you had imagined as you sat here in the studio.
Exactly. I actually pictured it as a room with no windows. And I was just there, and didn't. I don't usually have the rest of the world beyond that room, even in my mind, unless sounds enter in.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, in a radio studio, it's designed not to let sounds enter in. Here in my study, I have heard sounds outside this room, and so my mind does immediately picture what's going on in the adjacent room. Though, and I hope the radio audience didn't hear it, I did hear it, and I pictured it, but now that it's not there, that sound, that's dropped, and I'm only, in my mind, visualizing and experiencing the room in which I am sitting. So that's a minus in that I don't get the vastness, the wonder, of all those things around. It can be a plus because I'm not quite as easily distracted by those.
Well, here's what I'd like on the other side of the break. I'd like to pose a couple of opportunities for you to use your imagination and see what you can share with me. I'm talking with Pastor David Andrus. He is the Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission. It's an Ask the Pastor program. We'll be right back. AM 850 KFUO salutes our day sponsors on this Monday, March 24th, 2008. Terry and Pat Rosenberger. Today's day sponsors have made a contribution to AM 850 KFUO in loving memory of their son Scott and in celebration of their wedding anniversary. Once again, a very special thank you to Terry and Pat Rosenberger of Vergennes, Illinois, today's AM 850 KFUO day sponsors.
If you or a loved one struggle with depression, anxiety, or thoughts of suicide, Provident Life Crisis Services can help. For almost 150 years, Provident has been giving hope and counseling to members of the St. Louis community. Call the 24-hour support network at 1-800-273-TALK. Provident's highly trained counselors and volunteers are committed to helping people find hope in the midst of overwhelming life crises. Please make the call today. It could save a life. Call 1-800-273-TALK.
The smallest of sea turtles has some unusual gifts. Learn about them next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
AM In man's way of thinking, a small animal, especially one that lives in the ocean, tends to be regarded as unimportant. However, in God's view, all living things are his creation, and not one is ever unimportant. A good example is the smallest of the sea turtles. While most mature sea turtles weigh hundreds of pounds, the Kemp's Ridley weighs only 60 to 100 pounds. So little has been known about the Kemp's Ridley that it was not until 1947 that scientists knew that mature members of the species were found only on a beach on Mexico's coast. Because the eggs are prized by humans, as well as by coastal creatures, the population of Kemp's Ridley is down to less than 1,000 egg-laying females. However, the Creator has given Kemp's Ridley some advantages over other sea creatures. The female can lay fertile eggs for several years after she has mated just once, and she may lay as many as 135 eggs at each time. Although Kemp's Ridley was almost completely ignored and unknown to science, God has not treated Kemp's Ridley as unimportant, nor has he neglected to give this creature special gifts for its survival. Christians may be considered unimportant by the world's standards, but God does not consider even one Christian as unimportant.
For a printed transcript of today's program, visit our website at creationmoments.com or call us toll-free at 1-800-42-BIBLE. And be sure to join us next time for another Creation Moments, proclaiming evidence of God's truth.
It's one thing for you to forgive someone for something they have done to you. It's quite another thing to forgive someone for what they have done to God. Are you aware that you can forgive both those who sin against you and also those who sin against God? That's the subject of the next Law and Gospel.
Listen to Law and Gospel weekday afternoons from 1 till 3 on AM 850 KFUO.
Learn about wetlands and the critters that call them home. Saturday, April 5th at the Bush Memorial Conservation Area in St. Charles. Kids can see live birds of prey, create wetland artwork, explore a beaver lodge, practice archery, see live turtles and snakes, and more. This is a free event with free parking and no reservations are required. Wetlands for Kids, Saturday, April 5th in St. Charles.
In our Bible study program, I'm Chuck Rathert. Numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. With us today is Pastor Dave Andrus. He is the Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission, our guest here today on our Ask the Pastor program. Okay, I've got a couple of opportunities here for you to use your imagination, Pastor Andrus, with your permission. In our previous hour today, our 10 o'clock hour, where we've been working through the Gospel of Matthew, We're in the middle of chapter 27, and I'm just going to read this, just a few verses here, just for your benefit and for those who may have not been with us in the 10 o'clock hour, beginning at verse 45 through verse 56. Now, from the sixth hour, there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, which is, my God, why have you forsaken me? And some of the bystanders hearing it said, this man is calling Elijah. And one of them at once ran and took a sponge, filled it with sour wine, and put it on a reed, and gave it to him to drink. But the other said, wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him. And Jesus cried out again with a loud voice, and yielded up his spirit. And behold, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth shook, and the rocks were split. The tombs also were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep were raised. And coming out of the tombs after his resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many. When the centurion and those who were with him, keeping watch over Jesus, saw the earthquake and what took place, they were filled with awe and said, truly, this was the Son of God. There were also many women there looking on from a distance who had followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering to him, among whom were Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of the sons of Zebedee. There's a lot of visual language in this section.
Mm-hmm.
This is the section we dealt with in the 10 o'clock hour. First of all, darkness. Now, from the sixth hour, there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. A phenomenon that I think probably caused people to be gripped with fear.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly if there was a supernatural meaning to the darkness.
Mm-hmm.
But for a person who is sightless, the arrival of darkness wouldn't have meant anything. Or would it?
Hard to say. Certainly, when it is a gray day, you don't feel the warmth of the sun. And there are times at night, especially at the cool of the night, as night comes and the sun sets, there's a coolness to the air that you feel even though you don't see the darkness.
But the
there were blind people then, certainly, and they probably experienced something's up, either the coolness or all of a sudden the sunshine was cut off. And it just depends whether there would have been a drop of temperature if they would have felt that. But certainly they might have just thought a cloud went over the sun, or they might have said, you know, this feels different.
So what we have here is a watch.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how a person who is blind feels about or thinks about a watch. They sit down here and they say, let us wait, let us see whether Elijah will come to see him. And then verse 51 says, and behold is a sighted word, is it not? At least in one way.
In one way, yes.
And behold, the curtain of the temple was torn in two. I might substitute the word look. And look,
mm-hmm.
the curtain of the temple was torn in two.
Mm-hmm.
And then these bodies come out of the graves, and what do? They appear to many. When you have all these words like, let's wait and see what happens, and behold, and appeared, what goes on in your imagination?
Behold, the curtain in the temple was torn. I'm going to flip it back to you for a second, Chuck. What do you visualize at that point?
Well, at that point, I have always, in my imagination, as I try to take the information that I have as to what the holy place where the table and the menorah mm-hmm. and the altar are and the Holy of Holies where the Ark of the Covenant is, I mean, I have that sort of pictured in my mind based on the measurements and the description we have
mm-hmm.
in the Old Testament, and then this very large almost like a movie theater kind of curtain
mm-hmm.
that separates the two. I just see that thing splitting in half from the top, ripping down, exposing the Holy of Holies to all who otherwise are not supposed to be looking in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a calamity, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
People probably don't realize the grace significance of it at the moment, but it's a pretty scary time. That's mm-hmm. kind of the way I imagine it.
Okay. I probably have a similar, but because I don't see with my eyes but see with my other senses, I hear a huge ripping, like if you could take a pair of blue jeans and rip it about 6 inches from your ear, that would be very loud. And I'm actually picturing in my mind, and I hear it, and I'm picturing people who are working in the temple, not even in the holy place, but just out in the general courtyard, they hear this huge rip, and they look at each other and go, what was that? And the priest goes in and looks, and he comes running out and says, the temple is open. I can see the Holy of Holy Places. That rip was the curtain being ripped apart. And we do know that was a very, very thick curtain, probably 3 inches thick of material. And that's why I always hear a huge ripping, so that I'm adding to my picture some of my other senses as well.
So here's my main question,
mm-hmm.
and this is the question that I've put to Pastor Bill Simmons, and With all due respect to Pastor Simmons, I didn't really give him enough time to respond to this, but I'll take it up with you.
Mm-hmm.
As Jesus bows his head and gives up the ghost, which the centurion observes, and then there is an earthquake, which the centurion probably hears and feels and observes, and bodies start coming out of the tombs, all of this prompts the centurion to say, truly, this was the Son of God. When you read that section, as you talked about before, do you become the centurion?
I do.
And what's going on in your centurion's imagination?
From what I know of history, a centurion, he is quite a dominant force in his culture and society. A centurion is a commander over at least 100, which means he has great possession of body and mind. He's a well-seasoned, trained fighter. He's probably very physically fit, that he could take on just about anybody in a fight and win because of his extra training,
See,
some of his other soldiers.
I was going to ask you, and I guess, I don't know if this is a fair question or not, I was going to ask you, well, what movie star would you have play the centurion in David Andrus's making of Matthew 27? But then, if you're not in a position to behold movie stars...
I'm really not. I don't know what the physique of what some of these movie stars are. One of the strongest, most... not only strength, but there's this adeptness with hand, eye, foot coordination that he's just very graceful and very confident of his body. That's what makes him such a great presence among people, that here is a man who is in control of his world, really, and is, you know, not many other people are like him with so much command and control of himself and other people, which means he's quick of mind and thought. And here this centurion is shaken because all of a sudden he's not in control. He feels and experiences someone else in control with the shaking of the ground, this man who died, this man who was very quiet and who didn't rail like the others, who didn't do the things expected that he's seen time and time again, that all his experiences helped him realize, I'm not in control. Someone else is.
So the question I put to Bill Simmons, Pastor Bill Simmons, was, based on the fact that the New Testament tells us in at least a couple of places that sight is not really part of the equation to confession. As a matter of fact, it may be an obstacle.
All right.
We walk by faith, not by sight. And faith is the evidence of things unseen. When he makes his confession, truly this was the Son of God, is that confession flowing from the eyes of his body or the eyes of his faith, do you think, Mr. Centurion?
I always took it as flowing from faith. Flowing from faith.
So, when he beholds these events with his eyes, he beholds them in such a way that he sees with eyes of faith, not just Roman centurion eyes.
Correct.
And this is so you would agree that then this, truly this was the Son of God, is a faith confession?
I think so. I think so.
I do too, but I don't know how I would defend it, since it seems that he's taking his information as a sighted man, and the New Testament tells us that we walk by faith, not by sight. That was my difficulty.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to struggle with the same issues with all of the disciples, whether it be Peter as he faces his Lord, John as they're fishing, and then they see him on the shore, or doubting Thomas. By the way, Thomas, I think he gets a bum rap in being called Doubting Thomas. I think he was Courageous Thomas. He wasn't in the room hiding behind locked doors. as the other disciples that were. They were the ones who were doubting and fearful. Thomas was out and about somewhere. Regardless, they were all confronted and experienced, not just through their eyes, but through touch and smell and taste and hearing, that Jesus was alive.
Finally, in this section we had today, it says there were also many women there looking on,
mm-hmm.
more sighted language,
mm-hmm.
from a distance,
mm-hmm.
who had followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering to him. I guess it would be prejudicial on my part to come to this conclusion, but with all this sight language here, that all these words that I've pointed out, whether it's darkness from the sixth hour or women looking on, would make it difficult for you to handle a passage like this. No doubt that's got to be wrong, but explain to me how it is.
People who are blind and visually impaired use those words, look, watch, hey, did you see the movie? We take in... let me come at it a different way, Chuck. What I like to say is sight is not in your eyes, it's in your mind. Your mind is what sees. And really what sight is observation with perception, meaning you understand it. There are a lot of people who see things, but they don't understand. And that's why I think the centurion had faith. You know, have you ever had the experience where you're running late and you go, where are my keys or where are my shoes? And you run around the house trying to find those things. And when you finally do, you realize, I walked by them three times.
Mm-hmm.
More than likely, you saw them, but it didn't register. You didn't have that perception. Those who are blind like myself, our perception comes through our other senses, as well as then past memories, which help click and make that connection with what we are experiencing, that, that's what this is. So it does lean upon those past experiences as well that we had for clarity of understanding. So we have those words, we use those words, but probably come at it slightly different, more from our other senses, but it ultimately ends in what we as the soul understands and perceives items to be.
It could be argued that as a believing man, mm-hmm. possessing eyes of faith,
mm-hmm.
and a man who's been a pastor for a long time, has been involved in Christian ministry for a long time, mm-hmm. we could maybe even make the case well-developed eyes of faith.
Mm-hmm.
You actually see better in some ways than an unbelieving person sees.
Mm-hmm.
An unbelieving person who is blind in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that a little bit? I mean, I can theorize about that, but I haven't walked that walk. How's your sight in eyes of faith, Pastor?
Well, you're catching me at a spot I don't like to always talk about. Because I think I try to be a very humble guy, and you're speaking about one of the gifts God really has given me that I think at times does place me in a better position than sighted people, and I don't like to always talk about that because it makes me uncomfortable, because it's one of my great gifts God has given.
But you must share your gift with us.
well, thank you. Eyes of faith. When I view, perceive the world, I'm always relating and connecting things back to Jesus. How does this relate and connect to him? How is it best used for him? How are people using items, things? What do they see, perceive in the world? And it's very easy for me when I'm in contact with people for not very long to identify their modus operandi, I suppose. You would say that, you know, these things are for my advantage, my use, what makes it good for me, versus those who are always in view of the Lord. How can my house, how can my job be utilized for Jesus' sake? For me, that becomes very, very plain and obvious, whether it's self-centered, other-centered, or Christ-centered. There are some non-Christians who are very other-centered, and many people say, boy, they sure are great people. They've got to be a Christian. And for me, no, not necessarily. They certainly are other-centered, and they're not focused on themselves, but I don't see that they're focused on God at all.
In the Bible, where Jesus gives sight to a number of blind people, and as you use your imagination to perceive what that might have been like, have you ever had in your time as a Christian pastor, have you ever had the opportunity to lead an unbelieving person to faith so that they become Christians?
And is
that experience similar to what you perceive in hearing the accounts of Jesus giving sight to the blind?
I never related it that way. I actually would relate it more to the picture we drew in the first half hour, where you could look out your window and you could see through the other window and see the chapel and see so much else in your world right through that little window that you aren't there alone, versus me, who just was you and I in that room.
Uh-huh.
I always, when a person comes to faith, all of a sudden it's like they're starting to see beyond themselves. They see God's next to them. They see that everything is relating to God and His presence. And they then start to see their family standing next to Jesus. They start to see their job as, well, Jesus is with me. And, oh, my, that makes this whole thing different now. I see it more in that context. I never thought about it as you had said it, about a person who was blind and sighted.
I just wonder, since you had said, as you make your way through the crucifixion account, you see yourself as Jesus, and what it would be like to be in that position, or if it's the account of the Apostle Paul in a shipwreck, you see yourself in Paul's sandals. So when you share the gospel with somebody, and they go from being an unbeliever to a believer, it would seem to make sense that you would see yourself, if I could put it that way, as the one who is applying the mud to their eyes and giving them sight.
To a degree, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, to me, that's exhilarating. That's I've never thought of it that way until just now. But that is thrilling.
It is just so thrilling. I remember the first time this is way back in the 70s when the Kennedy Evangelism Program and the Dialogue Evangelism Program were very active, and we went out and knocked on doors, and the person said, well, come on in, and they'd only visited once to church, and so we went and visited them, and we talked and led them through the steps of do you understand what sin is? Do you understand what faith is? No, and talked about that, and, well, that's where Jesus enters in, and I was scared to death. Oh, that was so scary. Now, it's quite the opposite. I relish and I look forward to those opportunities because of the excitement, the thrill, the opportunity of being with that person when their eyes are open to see Jesus. I just want to jump up and down.
How do you explain the change from going from being a kind of a terrifying thing to something no doubt you look forward to now?
The change probably came in because I saw, I've stayed connected with those people, by the way.
You saw?
Uh-huh. I saw the change in their life. It was absolutely plain and evident. Absolutely. From the way they viewed the world, they viewed each other. It was a married couple, Mike and Maureen.
Uh-huh.
And then how they viewed their kids and everything. And not saying their life was easy, because it's been over 30 years, and I still know what's happened. They've had some really rough, tough times. But in it all, especially Maureen has expressed how Jesus has been there and helped. And for me now, I no longer am fearful because I no longer see me. I'm viewing it with Jesus standing next to me, wanting to reach that person and wipe the scales from their eyes so that they can see him. And if I can be part of that, great. And if the person gets mad at me, I just look over to Jesus and say, "They let you go, Jesus. I'm so sad. I can see the tears on your face, too." I'm seeing it from Jesus' perspective. And that's why I no longer am fearful, because it's no longer Dave's perspective.
Well, I always come away from these conversations saying to myself, you know, when we hang up the phone here and we're done, saying to myself, he sees so much more than I do. And I don't want to be, I don't want to sound disrespectful. I'm grateful for the gift of sight.
Mm-hmm.
I have that,
mm-hmm.
and I don't disrespect that. But I do think that sometimes visually and perceptively, I guess is the word I'm looking for, it gets in the way. And to a certain extent, you see so much more than some of the rest of us who already have come to the conclusion that we see so much ourselves.
And if I can tie in with that in the last minute or so, that's what really Jesus meant when he inspired Paul to write, "The foot cannot say to the hand, I don't need you," or "the eye say to the ear, I don't need you." We learn from one another. Even as I was squirming a little bit in my false humility, I suppose I'd have to say, when you said, "Well, share with us what you see," that's the opportunity we have as Christians to work with each other to help one another's faith grow. We need each other. And together we will see Jesus more clearly, as well as then be able to share Jesus more clearly with our world, which so badly needs the Savior.
Amen, brother.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for the time.
Oh, you're welcome.
I'm glad
Thank
we
you.
Caught up with you. We'll let you return to your work there and your study, and look forward to our next conversation.
Indeed, and thank you.
All righty, sir. Pastor David Andrus, he is the Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission here, and it's always a joy to spend some time with him here on our Bible study program. Pastor John Lukomsky will be here next time as we finish up Matthew chapter 27. That will put us in position for a little bit of a delayed Easter celebration here on our Bible study program. Pastor Mark Hawkinson is due in on Wednesday to talk about Matthew 28, the resurrection account. Pastor Jeremy Klostermeyer will be here in the 11 o'clock hour. Well, I don't know if he'll be here on the phone, but we'll talk to him as our guest for Ask the Pastor on Tuesday. Thank you for listening.
Listen to Chuck Ratherton guests Monday through Friday at the same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the internet at kfuo.org. For a free copy of The Bible Study, please visit the audio archive section of our homepage. That's kfuo.org. The Bible Study is a broadcast service of Worldwide KFUO.